France was going to need allies. It simply could not proceed alone. And by the close of the 1920s, even after these hopeful initiatives taken by the German government under Stresemann, by the close of the 1920s, France felt largely betrayed by its wartime ally, Great Britain, and compelled to opt for some sort of defensive strategy to deal with this potentially threatening international situation. It is in the late 20s that France embarks upon this great project associated with military futility, the creation of the so-called Maginot Line along the Franco-German border in the east, a string of fortifications, cutting-edge technology of all sorts to build a massive fortress that would extend literally from the frontiers of Switzerland up to, and originally foreseen as covering the entire frontier of France. But there were some problems involved with the Maginot Line. For one thing, the construction was extraordinarily expensive. It began, ran along the Franco-German border, arched toward the Belgian frontier, and then stopped. Stopped at the Ardennes, this incredibly dense, thick forest area where France, Germany, and Luxembourg come together, Belgium come together, and then would not proceed along the Franco-Belgian frontier. Why did it not go the entire route to the sea? Well, for one thing, France and Belgium had a security agreement in which France was pledged to come to Belgium's aid should Belgium be invaded. Well, it seemed diplomatically perhaps not terribly astute if you're going to have an ally, the Belgian ally, to build a Maginot Line between Belgium and France, encouraging the Belgians to believe that France in trouble would simply retreat behind that Maginot defensive curtain. And there were also engineering problems in building these enormous fortifications in along this Belgian frontier where the water table is very high indeed. However, the building of the Maginot Line, I think more than anything else, reflects, despite whatever military value it might or might not have had, it does, I think, reflect a sense on the part of France that it was going to have to look after its own security pretty much by itself. And the way to do this, learning the lessons of the Great War, was to build tremendous defensive fortifications, which had been so effective during the conflict between 1914 and 1918. The advent of Hitler in Germany would, of course, underscore the imperative of French security arrangements, France to construct, to maintain a defensive posture capable of protecting French national security. But without strong British support, France could do no more than protest, for example, German rearmament in 1935, the introduction of the Air Force, the German Army, and then, of course, as we've seen, the Anglo-German Naval Agreement of 1935 was simply a dagger in the heart to the French. This was perfidious Albion of Britain reneging on its obligations, if not even a formal treaty obligation. But here, as we've seen, this power that was pledged to protect the Treaty of Versailles, to enforce it, had signed an agreement which undermined it. Divided at home and without strong allies abroad, France felt compelled to accept the German occupation of the Rhineland in 1936, protesting to Germany, protesting to the League of Nations, but France also registered the fact that Great Britain had not lodged a similar protest. In addition, one possible ally, Mussolini's Italy, an ally which, a potential ally who in 1934 had actually stepped in to join with France and with Britain to protest the Nazi attempted coup in Austria. France would find a wedge driven between itself and fascist Italy by the events of 1935-36. Mussolini's invasion of Ethiopia in 1935 was condemned by France and by Great Britain and by the League of Nations, which attempted to impose sanctions on Italy.